Agenda is in IRC. Today on the agenda, we have one addition to the beginning of the call. Vikash is here to chat a bit about the Google Summer of Code project. Vikash, am I saying your name correctly, or is it said some another way?
No, it's Vikash. The H is prominent.
So it's just, say again, sorry?
Vikash.
Vikash, okay.
So you join both departments, Vikash.
Okay. So Vikash.
Yeah, that's acceptable.
Okay, sorry. We'll get it right. We will get it right over time.
I'll make you do so.
Okay, thanks. So our agenda is there. We've got a quick discussion about Google Summer of Code, and then we're going to launch into the rest of the agenda. Are there any updates or changes to the agenda before we get started?
Is everyone else watching with amusement? Kingsley and Dave Booth fight it out.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Good.
I'm glad they were able to hook up and talk about that.
Okay, no changes to the agenda. First up, Google Summer of Code. Vikash is one of the GSOC proposal writers. I think we have 40 people interested across LB3C. Only around 10 people have really gotten their, 10 or 12 have really gotten their proposals in. I believe the deadline is this Friday. Is that right, Vikash?
Yeah, it's May 1st.
May 1st. May 1st.
May 3rd.
Third, okay, yeah, so that's this Friday. So there's usually a big rush of comments in. We've been trying to keep up with the proposals to make sure that we're on top of them and we're giving good feedback. I think, Vikash, without promising anything, I think Vikash has one of the stronger proposals for JSON-LD, and I think it also speaks in his favor that he is on the call today. You're the only Google Summer of Code participant to show up on one of these calls, so that I think weighs favorably in, towards you as being a strong candidate. Are there any questions that you have, Vikash, for the group or about your proposal that you would like to cover for a couple of minutes?
There will be a few things. Like initially, I submitted a proposal, and after the implementation part, which I've been doing for around which I was into last week, and by God's grace, I got good remarks on the same. I've edited my proposal a bit, and by May 3rd, depending on what's going on for the on the website terms, I'll update it again once again.
Okay.
There was one particular problem that we have already discussed, so I'm not bothered about that we discussed on IRC the later day. So I will keep that out of the discussion today.
You trailed off at the end a bit. Say that again, please.
I was saying on IRC, as we discussed about the plagiarism, so I think in my humble opinion, I should keep that out of the discussion today.
Yeah, that's being taken care of, and I don't think that other person is going to have a chance at participating.
Yeah.
So
one of the things that I really was looking forward to is I submitted my proposal way before. I think it was on the first day of the submission itself. I was looking forward to more criticism and things where I can improve or where do I learn.
Any feedback from the group on Vikash's proposal? Because I've reviewed it, I think, twice so far, two or three times so far, and given feedback on IRC. One of the reasons you might not be getting that much feedback is that it's a pretty good proposal. I think if we end up being able to work with you for the Google Summer of Code, that we might end up changing small things here and there. When, you know, at that point, are there any? Is there any other input from the group on Vikash's proposal? Do you have a link to the proposal, Vikash?
Oh, just a second. I'll give it in one sec.
Okay.
I watched most of the discussions going across IRC, and it sounded good to me. It sounded like there was a pretty good plan for spacing out what would be worked on and how long it would take.
Yeah, and there's the link. I don't know. Can everybody access that? I think you have to be logged in or you have to be a mentor.
Oh, just a second. I'll post another link and I'll make it public.
Okay.
I just removed the visibility. I guess this should be visible.
And what I might do is I might pick out the public URL. So here's the everyone go to this link, because I think you don't have to be in Google's Melange system to view it. So that's Vikash's proposal.
Yeah, that's an HTML which has to be improved again. I was looking on the contents, and I have updated my proposal recently with all the Dropbox links of the new website that I was working upon. I would really like the community to give some bits of inputs for the website. Is it on the correct terms, or should I improve, or where which part can be improved?
It's a pretty solid proposal. I don't think that you really need to improve anything, at least for the Google Summer of Code submission. Does anyone else feel that anything? So basically, what Vikash is working on is he's going to update the JSON-LD.org website to Twitter Bootstrap, and then he is going to create a fairly complete context for schema.org to create basically a tool to create JSON-LD from just input that kind of web developers provide, so being able to mark up people, places, events, things like that, and converting it to JSON-LD. And then once he finishes this tool called like the JSON-LD Creator, he's going to shift over to getting data from the LinkedIn API and converting LinkedIn JSON data to JSON-LD data. And we might actually end up using that tool to convince LinkedIn that they should start publishing their data into JSON-LD. And then the last part of his schedule of deliverables revolves around writing documentation and code samples and tutorials.
In fact, there's one thing that I would like to add to this.
Please go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. So, as I said, I started with BitSoft's website.
Can I interject? Marcus, I think that you are the source of the echo that's going on. I'm wondering if you could mute before until you talk.
Yeah. So, should I continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So this week, from my end, my target is to understand the schema, or in a way, start understanding the schema and writing a small bit of context. So that one of the things that I'm planning is so that I save my time, a lot of time during JSOG and reading stuff. Rather, I use those time periods for implementation. So my initial agenda was to make 2 to 3 web pages for the website, so that it can be easily demonstrated. And if I have a fair understanding of the schema before the JSOG period starts, I'll have a fair understanding and implementation, and I'll get ample time in implementation during my JSOG, if given an opportunity to work with JSON-LD and WPC.
Okay, that sounds good. What was the specific question, though? Did you say you had a question?
So my question is, this week when I plan to start my understanding for schema.org and start writing context, so I'll need the help from the community, and especially from you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be on IRC. Just ask any questions that you need on IRC.
Sure.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Just the tip. Hopefully, the context won't be much more advanced than this if our design works as we expect it to.
Yeah, that's true. I was wondering if it might actually be helpful to have a full-blown schema.org context so that people could maybe mix schema.org with some other vocabularies, possibly. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but...
I'm sorry, but currently, as of now, some things sound Greek to me and is beyond my scope of understanding. Because please refrain yourself from using the big words as of now. Maybe by next week, I can understand more of it.
Okay, that's fine. I think there are two ways that you could write this context. The first one is what Nicholas just put into IRC. So it's just that one-liner, and that's the entire context. The other approach is to specify every single key-value pair in schema.org.
I was going through the JSON-LD source file, and there were a few people, events, and places .json-ld with context.
Mm-hmm.
And I found, if there's an event, then there's a GPS coordinate, and there's latitude, longitude, place, and all the other details in key-value pairs. So that was one way. And if I use the way which has been described by Nicholas on IRC, that can be one simple line of that and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The
thing that I'm concerned about is if we use vocab, other people might use it, and that might make it difficult for other vocabularies to be mixed in without accidentally assigning things that are not actually schema.org terms to schema.org. So if somebody puts in something like FUBAR or BAS, and it wasn't meant to map to anything with the context that Nicholas put in there, it would map to schema.org, and that would produce bad data. So that's the only concern I have. Nicholas, I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
I still think that the first option is better in principle. The other one is maybe a bit too overzealous to some extent. It depends on the audience, and I don't know what kind of message that could send. If your goal was something like that, I would write a script in Python to generate that JSON-LD context from the schema.org vocabulary RDF.
Yep.
Yeah. The other thing is we do need to consider that there might be IRI range properties that vocab would allow us to capture properly. And that is a common source of problems, is people not... defining things that should be lengths and end up just being interpreted as literals.
Yes.
Yep.
That and the lists, explicit ordered lists.
Yep. Okay. Mm. Okay. So Vikash, this is basically, we're not quite clear on exactly what the context would look like, should look like. So there's going to be a little bit of discussion about, what the best path forward is. It might be that you end up using two different contexts, depending on the audience. Marcus, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Vikash what kind of programming languages he knows, and since I've seen that he worked with Mozilla last year, I wanted also to ask him if he would be interested to try to do a plugin or something for Firefox. Either just render JSON-LD or even implement the JSON-LD API natively into Firefox, for example.
What I was thinking is, initially, My skills will be Python, JavaScript, HTML5, CSS3, a bit of web technologies and a bit of backend technologies from Node and other stuff. My initially what I thought was because in terms of using JavaScript API of LinkedIn as well, which will be implemented in future, I was thinking to handle everything on JavaScript and jQuery on the client side. So this way, the manipulations will be pretty easy for an object. And depending upon the object, we can play around with that instead of doing anything on the back end. So I wanted to make it everything on the client side.
Yeah, but I wasn't asking about that. I was asking whether you would be interested in implementing, for example, a JSON-LD processor or something. Because currently we have a number of implementations, but most of them are from people who worked on the spec like all the time.
So it would be
interesting to see if it's simple for you to implement such a thing in whatever language you would like, or, you know.
So initially when I and Manu had a discussion, my intention was instead of making it browser specific, for the benefit of client side will be it will work on every browser. And when I demonstrated using LinkedIn, it will be fair because it cannot be generic in my humble opinion because there will be a problem in how the data is being sent. Say an API releases name for the person. And the other API uses me, for example. So
let me jump in really quickly here. I think we should think about how we're going to use the Google Summer of Code students' time most efficiently. And I think implementing another JSON-LD processor, while useful, I don't think is as useful as creating some of these tools that are missing from the stack. So basically being able to have a tool that generates JSON-LD from a form or being able to kind of demonstrate how you pull JSON from a web resource and then convert it into JSON-LD. Those are things that we haven't done before, whereas a processor is something we've done before. And an implementation of the API in a browser, I don't know how useful that is, meaning that we kind of already have that in JSON-LD.js. You can already do that via JSON-LD.js, so having something that implements the browser API is, at least to me, it's questionable as to whether or not that's an efficient use of Vikash's time.
But we need two interoperable implementations, right, to leave
CR. Yeah.
We have several people working on implementations, right?
Well,
I mean,
not of the browser API.
No, but we don't have to have. Oh, I see. Well, we might need several implementations of the API. But do they have to be JavaScript implementations? I mean, WebIDLE is supposed to be, in fact, is it not better if they are not both JavaScript?
Yes, it would be, but there's a question on whether that's possible or not. Dave Longley's going to have to talk a bit more about that when we get into, or Marcus, when we get into that agenda item. Okay, so how about this? There is the Google Summer of Code intern that comes on, if they have the capability of writing JSON-LD API, we could swap out the LinkedIn project for that.
I think, please continue.
Okay, and Marcus, do you think that would be acceptable, or?
Yeah, sure. I just think it would be very valuable to get some input from someone who hadn't been working with the spec like years,
right?
And see how easy it is for someone like that to implement the algorithms that we specified.
Yep. Okay. So let's go ahead and wrap the discussion up. Vikash, do you have any other questions that you'd like to ask before we move on to the next agenda items?
Yeah, so I have just one question. It says we could swap the LinkedIn project for another API implementation in JS. In a way, the API is an abstraction of the LinkedIn API, the app itself, in my opinion, because the API will be a generic one. Is it true, or am I on the wrong line?
Which API specifically are you talking about? The JSON-LD API?
No, I'm talking if there's an app which converts JSON to JSON-LD.
Yeah, it's going to be specific. Well, okay, so there are two ways that we could look at it. One of them is that you could try and figure out a way to make it generic. I don't exactly know what that would look like because I don't have a good handle on the problem. Or you could just make it specific to LinkedIn in the beginning, and then after we've done that work, you can figure out how to make it generic to other services. So, I mean, ideally, you know, you would be able to take the same code and then apply it to Twitter JSON or Facebook JSON or things like that.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking on those lines, which is fairly very acceptable to me because it gives me a better understanding in the first scenario, and rather giving me a big bunch of problem, I'll be easily able to break it down.
Yes. Okay. So you're saying that you would do a specific LinkedIn implementation first and then try to make it generic.
Yeah. So because in a way, at the end, we should get something which is useful.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, writing an entire API for which is generic will be a bit of time taking. And that's my opinion.
Yep, I agree. I think that's a good. I think the approach that you want to take is a good approach on that.
So that at the end we should have something which is worth it.
Yep, I agree. Okay, all right. Let's go ahead and move on to our agenda. We have quite a couple of things to get through. Vikash, you're more than welcome to stick on the call and listen into the discussion. Any other input to Vikash before we move on?
No, that'd be all. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. All right, next up, JSON-LD API and futures. Dave Longley has, I believe, completed the futures implementation of the JSON-LD API.
Can't hear a thing.
Maybe if we can get can anybody hear me?
Yeah, I think
that was weird.
I can now, but for a bit there, it was completely.
Yeah, you were in a wind tunnel for a minute.
That's strange. Okay, so Dave Longley has implemented the JSON-LD Futures API. Marcus has implemented the spec text. Could we have some updates? Dave, you first, and then Marcus, and where we are with it.
Sure. So I went off and found. I went off and talked on the WGRC. Channel, and they directed me to an implementation of futures in JavaScript that matched the DOM spec. And this is this implementation was done by Alex Russell, and he's been working on futures and things like that. And so I went and took his DOM futures implementation and made that a dependency of JSON-LD if you're of JSON-LD JS if you're using the API that uses futures. The JSON-LD JS library provides you with two different APIs for using JSON-LD. One is the traditional continuation passing style callback mechanism that Node.js uses. The other is futures, so you can use it in the browser, and it complies with the direction that it seems like web APIs might be going in. And it was fairly easy to implement once I had the futures implementation. I was thinking I was going to have to implement futures myself, which would have just taken more time. In any case, the web IDL test harness that we have on the site now passes. I can grab a link to that real quick. Marcus beat me to it. And so if you scroll down to the bottom of that, everything passes except for a test that I don't think is possible to pass because you can't change the result of that test without writing native code. So this is running on the JavaScript library. And I also rewired the playground to use the features API. So it's now using that. It is actually using the API. So if you go to the playground and use it in any way, it'll be going through the features API. And everything seems to work all right. Marcus was talking about possibly changing this IDL test to hook up something to output an evaluation test for those oral reports. We haven't done that, and I haven't had time to do that. But if anyone's interested in doing that, that's something we might be able to do.
You know, it struck me when I was looking at the implementation here that of the generic IDL test framework, that it really should output URL if it's intended to be used for W3C APIs, and URL is the testing report format for submitting results, then it would seem that having those integrated in there would really be a good thing for everyone.
Right, and then this could all just happen all on one page, and people could come in and inject their own. If they wrote something in JavaScript, they can inject their own processor there. Anyway, it seems to be working. It wasn't too difficult to do because there was an implementation out there for DOM futures that I was able to just leverage. But that's a dependency that the library has now until a browser actually implements DOM futures.
Vikash, you're on the queue?
When I was, I guess everyone has seen the implementation of the playground page that I was doing. I shared the link on the GitHub as well on the bug. By any chance, did anyone see that?
I saw the playground implementation, but that doesn't have anything to do with the iPhone.
No, I have just one question. So when I was doing that, I had a problem in, because my intention was to have minimal changes in the playground.js or any of these scripts already written. So I... Hello?
Okay, I see what you're saying. We can update what you're doing later on. It's not a big deal. You'll basically pull a new version of the DOM futures. The futures API and pull it into the work that you're doing. So it should be a minor change.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Because it's a minor change, and I do get that.
Okay. Okay, Marcus, any updates? Dave, are you finished with your... Actually, why don't you give us kind of an update on some of the downsides? Because I think it's not evident.
Okay. Well, some of the downsides of DOM futures are... I still feel as though they're debating what the best approach to doing futures is, because it's unclear when things are going to be asynchronous or when they're going to be synchronous when using futures, and people need to make it very clear what the order is of operations with futures. And I'm just going through my head of the stack of things that people have been debating back and forth as to how futures will end up working. As far as we're concerned, if futures are going to be the way that people do things, we've written the spec in such a way that it's abstracted. All these details are sort of abstracted away, and some of the concerns don't affect us. For instance, they're debating how to handle progress events that happen with futures right now on the mailing list. And if a future is something when you construct a future, if an operation that it's wrapping, if an asynchronous operation that the future is wrapping can begin when you construct a future, then you could miss progress events that happen before you attach progress handlers. You know, there are a bunch of esoteric sort of issues that are related to that that hopefully don't actually affect JSON-LD in any way. In addition to that, there's just general debate over the execution order of futures and how to attach handlers and things to it. And how to extend them to cover more use cases, and how to join features together when you have more complex code flow problems that you need to solve. In the end, the stuff that does affect us is, in my opinion, the put chaining code together that uses futures is a little bit messier and a little more obtuse. It takes a little more cognitive load to try and understand what the API is doing when you're comparing it to a simple callback mechanism. If you're just sewing a bunch of callbacks together, it's very clear what's going on and in the order that things happen in. And you don't have to try and understand what various API terms mean when you're making calls. When using futures, you have to call little functions like then and done, and it might not be clear when you call then and when you call done and what the difference is. It's also not clear that, you know, it takes more understanding to figure out that you're passing in this resolver object that has other methods on it. Yet hopefully, as I'm explaining this, you can see that there are a bunch of little details that you have to understand versus there's a callback, and when you're finished, you call the callback. Or if you fail, you call the callback with an error. You know, that's much easier to explain. However, all that being said, all those sort of API details and things that are difficult to understand might go away once ECMAScript 6 is adopted, because they have some new mechanisms in there and a new keyword called yield that might also be changed to await. I'm not sure, but it's a new word that's in there that effectively makes all that extra text and API stuff go away, and instead you call yield and give it a promise. And once the promise has completed, once you call yield, it will pause the current stack frame. And once the promise is completed, it will continue the stack frame using the return value from your promise. And that sort of makes asynchronous programming look like synchronous programming, and it's all sort of clean, and you don't have a bunch of API stuff that's sort of confusing you. At the same time, some of that will still leak into the people that actually have to write the custom promises. So writing the actual custom code and chaining it all together looks a lot messier than actually using it. And in the case of web APIs, hopefully people are more often using other promises and things that people have written than they are actually constructing code and putting it together. I don't know how true that is. Certainly in Node.js, you're constantly writing custom code and chaining it all together, so this sort of DOM futures API stuff would be constantly in your face. However, all of that stuff that you need to try and understand might not be there in the case of web programming. So it's sort of unclear where the future's going. I don't want to be too down on the idea of futures. That, you know, the end result might be sort of elegant, but I don't know if it's the direction I would go in, and I'm not sure where all the debate is going to end up. But I think JSON-LD is in an okay position to move forward either way.
Yeah. So I think the biggest concern I had with the future stuff is it seems like in the short term it's going to be more difficult to use than the node continuation style passing stuff. And like Dave Longley said, you know, when we move to the ECMAScript yield statement, the assumption is that web programming is going to be done on top of some kind of framework that's provided with the the web apps APIs. But I think the problem with that is that that's never actually worked out well. I mean, people always end up wrapping the stuff that W3C creates in some higher level library, and so like Dave Longley said, my concerns are the same. It seems like we're inventing this new thing. It's still being put together. The future stuff is still being put together and sorted out. ECMAScript 6 is definitely not here, and we don't know when it's going to get here. But it also seems fairly clear that if we take the Node.js-style continuation passing route, that there's going to be a lot of pushback from that from the browser vendors. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I'm wondering if perhaps it would be better to, given that Dave Longley's shown fairly easily how you can have two APIs, and that Futures is clearly not fully baked yet, that there's substantial risk of requiring of making a normative reference to futures from our spec, and maybe the way to handle it is through a note that basically specifies non-normatively the futures futures variant of the JSON-LD API. And then
on
a 1.1 release, we could... Excuse me?
Are you saying split the API out into a node?
Well, I'm just thinking we could publish with an API using callbacks, as we had, which we're actually now in last call on, and just keep it the way it is, but then describe a note, which is the futures version of the API.
Yeah, but if you remember, that's the comment that we had come in. It's that they said, don't do that. You should be using the futures API. So it's not baked.
I think Dave Longley has shown that it's just not. There's too much debate going on, and it's not clear where these things are going. Now maybe it's maybe the bits that we depend upon are stable. Maybe not.
Yeah.
There's risk if they're not, certainly. It certainly means having an interoperable implementation for something which is in such flux doesn't really perhaps add much value. So I just think it seems to me that the timing is really tough for what we're trying to do here.
Paul, you're on the queue.
Is there any indication when all the futures stuff is supposed to be fully baked and fully functional and all that? Because right now we're trying to finish up a spec and we're getting feedback saying, well, we don't like this spec because you're not using this other spec that hasn't actually been finished yet. And that's a self-defeating prophecy there.
Well, I was going to say, the argument's going to be exactly what Marcus just said. It's a spec of the WebWG, so it's a living standard. It's never going to reach a completed state. And the argument is just going to be that it will evolve with time to be the best it can be, effectively. My biggest hang-up with the future stuff is I don't see the Node.js people embracing the direction that things are going. That being said, the web, the stuff that runs in the browser is not Node.js. It is, and if everyone else who's writing web APIs is going in that direction, I think that's the direction we're going to have to take, even if this other community that, in my opinion, has a lot of experience writing asynchronous code and has this prolific module ecosystem that's been very successful with the mechanisms that they've chosen. I think that the people working on features should be looking more at how that works. I put a little link in here just from Isaac Schluter, who's sort of the caretaker of Node.js, just in his quick little comment about how he says if promises were the first class members of the language with which they might be in ES6, and they had deterministic flow control properties, which is something I was saying that it's unclear where that's going, and they could be optimized, which was another big problem, because it might slow a lot of things down. But maybe we don't care in the web case. I don't know. Then he'd be all about them. And then there's a joke related to that in the link. But it seems like the general feeling I get is everyone's going to really be pushing for people who write web APIs to use futures. Futures themselves might change. And I think we've done a good enough job abstracting away what a future means in our spec to have that work. And if it all gets dropped, I don't know how much that's going to actually harm us. It's just, I don't know how important it is for everyone to be using exactly the same API in their various programming environments. If you're going to be using it on the web, you're probably going to end up using futures because that just seems like the way that things are going. And you're going to be using a different API somewhere else. That's problematic for writing two interoperable implementations because why would you need two? But I think that's just the state of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we're doing is we're writing this thing for the browsers. That's what the API spec is. We shouldn't pretend that it's for anything else. and because of that, they're going with futures. It's become very clear that that's the direction that the browser vendors want to go. So if we break ranks with that, then we're not doing ourselves any favors to get it adopted into the browsers.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say is if they're looking to more tightly integrate with ECMAScript, that will be the end goal of how futures work, which also means I don't want just tying this back to the previous conversation about getting another implementation for the API. I don't know what language you're going to write it in and why it would be useful in that language. You're not going to write it in PHP because you're not going to go off and do all this asynchronous stuff. You're not going to implement a futures library in PHP. I don't understand the utility of that. Yeah, if you go off and implement it in Python, Python is coming up with an entirely different solution in like Python 3.3 for how futures will look. So you're not going to write something that really looks the same way, but maybe it could all work out depending on the direction Python goes. I don't understand the usefulness of several other languages. Maybe Greg could speak to whether or not it would be useful in Ruby. But it's like using futures is really going to be that's what you do when you're writing something in the browser, and that's it.
Okay. Any other input on this before we move on to the next agenda item?
I'm basically agreeing with the points just made. This API is becoming part of an upcoming W3 spec, so if it was a common JS spec, the Node.js callback style would be suitable. Apparently, the future style is very likely to be what the web specs should look like, so I can only agree with that, and the way it has been written into the spec seems fairly safe given the situation. So although I can't say anything more at any depth, my impression is that should be the way to go then. To remark, usually in Python, sooner or later, if things end up in the standard API, they will be like sort of look like the W3C APIs, if there are any such for certain situations. So, for example, the DOM API usually is adapted, but a bit more Pythonic. And as was just mentioned, the upcoming Python async rebooted support uses a flavor of futures, and upon that they add support for the yield statement. So that should, it might be that the ECMA 6 yield support will do the same and build that upon futures rather than Node.js style callbacks.
So, Marcus, thoughts on the spec text covering this? Do you feel that it's fairly stable and solid and we could go to second last call with it?
Yeah, I try to keep it as abstract as possible so that simple changes such as naming changes or something doesn't bite us. And, well, I mean, the concept itself, if you look at it from a high level, it's quite simple. So there are just a couple of sentences that I had to add, and, of course, the reference to the DOM spec. But especially the reference to the DOM spec, I mean, we should also keep in mind that even the JSON specification is not a standard. It's just an informational RFC, so it shouldn't be a problem to reference the DOM spec, because that's kind of the same situation there.
Yep.
And that being said, we talked about adding examples or things to the spec. I don't actually think we should do that. I thought about it, that we could, of course, do it, but then we would have to change those examples, or we would end up having wrong examples if they just change the name of, for example, done to completed or something. So I think it's better to not include that. Someone can always write a tutorial or something how to use the API, but I mean, it's trivial enough to look up the DOM spec, how to make use of that return value then.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay. Let's try to get through the next couple of agenda items pretty quickly. The implementation report submissions topic is next. Just a reminder that we should all, since the Futures API stuff seems to be stabilizing a bit, or at least what we're going to do with it is stabilizing a bit, if people could start submitting URL report, implementation report submissions in URL format over the next couple of weeks, I think that would help us get through candidate rec faster. Any updates, Greg, on implementation report submissions or what we should be doing?
No, I think we talked about that last week. Format is really pretty straightforward in terms of writing something, either JavaScript or Turtle or whatnot, that creates an assertion for each test with reference to the processor and pass-fail or not tested, or there's a variety of other types of verbs you can use from the oral report, but typically pass or fail is what we're looking for on that. And yes, send those in, and as soon as we start getting them, I can start pushing out sort of versions of the consolidated URL report in HTML and Turtle and JSON-LD. I've been struggling to get enough time for myself to get my own version updated so that I could start submitting reports. But yeah, I think first one that can do so, and it should be pretty straightforward to render. If you look at the template that I had given before on the Turtle report that I've generated, many people would just take that and just substitute out some bits for others. You can pretty much create, if you wanted to do it in Turtle, you could do it with a pretty simple template.
Okay. Marcus, you're on the queue.
I've started implementing a PHP test framework or test harness based on PHP unit. And one thing that led to some problems was that currently the base of all those tests, so the tests are identified with a URI, but those are just hash URIs, so without the base or anything.
But you submit using the absolute URI that you would get by processing that. If you process those, if you turn those manifests into RDF, you'll get their canonical URIs out.
Exactly.
Right? Or you
but
just expand them.
The problem is if you start implementing something, you probably are not ready yet to expand those things. So you couldn't run the test suite without expanding the test manifest. Otherwise, you have to treat it as JSON. And the most trivial. Well, that's just one problem I encountered, or that made it more difficult than it has to be, in my opinion. So if we would just replace those hash URIs with full URIs, I think that would make it much simpler to run the tests without having to have a functioning JSON-LD processor to begin with.
I think it adds an awful lot of noise to the specs, and the process for other test manifests is to use relative URIs. If someone is not able to expand them, then as long as we make clear what the base URI for the test is supposed to be, and of course that is something that needs to be settled and probably should be something that's in the TR space ultimately, as the test should be frozen at some point, and ultimate submissions should come in against a frozen test suite. Then simply sort of specifying what that base URI is can allow people to then append the appropriate fragment to it to get the test they want out. So I'd propose we keep the hash-based URIs and expect that the people that are sophisticated enough to submit URL reports already know how to deal with those types of things.
Yeah, I had no objection from me. Marcus, you were saying it was an annoyance, but it wasn't a hard barrier to pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's of course simple enough to work around that or to hard code basically the expansion of the hash URIs, but yeah, it makes it more difficult than it has to be, in my opinion.
Okay. I've got a hard stop at the top of the hour, but we should really discuss the second last call for the JSON-LD API really quickly. And actually, let's put the last two topics into the same agenda item. So we're going to have to do a second last call for the JSON-LD API because we made the futures change. We are not going to have to do a second last call for the JSON-LD syntax spec, so we might just want to move that to CR. And it's kind of strange because that moving to CR doesn't really mean anything because the test suite covers a lot of the API stuff. But maybe by moving the JSON-LD syntax to candidate rec, we can ask for implementations while the JSON-LD API goes through the second last call. And then once the JSON-LD API goes through the second last call, we'll have implementation reports for both specs, and at that point we can just jump straight to PR. So the proposal is to offset how we're publishing these documents such that we enter candidate rec, but we have a second last call for the API, and we have the API and the syntax come out of last call and candidate rec at the same time, so we can then move both of them to PR. Greg, you're on the queue.
How does someone claim conformance of the syntax? We don't have a syntax. It's not clear what that. How you would do that. There's no test suite, for instance, for the syntax. I'm not exactly sure what it would mean, since it's not something that a processor does. Against what are you reporting conformance?
I thought it was just plain old JSON, but that might not be good enough for some people. I would imagine, you know, we're a subset of JSON. It's really the processor that determines whether or not what you have is turned into. You could say that the syntax might be, you know, certain error conditions, but honestly, the syntax is supposed to be pretty much just JSON, right? Marcus, you're on the queue as well.
Yeah, that's a similar question. First of all, do we need to resolve the features at risk for CR? Probably not. And the second question was similar to Greg. So if you're going to CR, what would be the exit criteria? Or are we able to specify an exit criteria for that? Or should we instead try to jump directly to PR, I think it is?
So what I'm proposing is that we go to CR with the JSON-LD syntax spec, and we say that the exit criteria is passing the JSON-LD test suite.
Isn't that the exit criteria for the API spec?
It is for the API spec as well, yes.
All right, so it just goes to CR. It stays there until JSON-LD API also goes to CR, and we have implementation reports, and at which we can claim that we have satisfied the criteria for both the syntax and the API.
Yeah, and in fact, I would imagine that the JSON-LD API wouldn't go to CR at all. We'd skip over it because effectively the syntax spec going to CR will give us an implementation report, and that implementation report is going to be the exact same thing that anyone would have to submit for the JSON-LD API anyway. So from JSON-LD syntax, we'll go from last call to CR and then wait for the API to go to PR. The JSON-LD API will go from last call to second last call, and then it'll skip completely pass CR and go to PR with the JSON-LD API. The JSON-LD syntax. Does that make sense?
Can you type that out?
Sure. I have to go, unfortunately. I have a hard stop. But I'll send it to the list. I'll send an email out to the list to try to clarify.
All right.
You know, it's a weird jumping around that we're doing. Okay. Anything else before we end the call? Okay. Thanks everyone for the call, and thanks for joining with us. And we'll chat next week.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
And one last thing. Happy birthday to the web.
Thank you. Bye.